Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Godrej Consumer Products Limited Analyst and Investor Conference Call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to the management. Thank you, and over to you.
Hi, everyone. This is Sudhir here. A very good morning to all of you. A quick presentation from our side on what we think is a hidden jewel, which is RCCL and why GCPL bought RCCL. There's been a lot of curiosity among the analysts and investor community on why we made this move. So I thought we'd spend about 25 to 30 minutes explaining our rationale, and then I'll be happy along with Sameer and Nisa to take on any questions that y'all have. Yeah. I think a quick reminder before we start off on RCCL on what is our strategy. And I just go back to this deck from circa December 21, where we said that this is a business that we would like to move to double-digit volume growth as an aspiration. Certainly a high aspiration, and one that the first few quarters of last year we were quite far away from, but it still remains our aspiration. And we said we would do it through two things. We would develop the categories we are present in and fund this development of category through simplifying our business. So this was a one slide deck on our strategy for the next few years. I think over the last 2 years now, or 1.5 years, We feel that our category development capability has got a lot better. I think our insights on category development are sharper. We have launched a lot of innovations which democratize categories. One of the big levers for category development is access. We have invested media even when the going was tough in the first half of last year, and are also using proprietary algorithms to make sure that the return on investment on media is at its best. And we also have an army on ground. To give you a perspective, we are doing close to 10 million calls this year on home to home. At any point in time, we have about 4,000 people on the ground doing on ground marketing for GCPL. So over the last 1.5 years, along with a lot of talent boosting and talent capability, we find that our marketing capability and category development capability has significantly improved. Next slide. And I think we are increasingly feeling more and more confident that if we look at GCPL's portfolio, which is India, international, high penetration categories and low penetration categories, that the set of low penetration categories in India is really our bullseye. And we'd like to increase the salience of India-based low penetration categories, because ultimately penetration is the biggest driver of volume growth. And we feel confident that we can probably develop a few more under-penetrated categories. And when we were going to present to the, to analysts and the board, in this next few opportunities, we were probably going to say that we feel ready, next chart, Tapan. We feel ready that along with developing existing portfolios, we could probably develop a few more under-penetrated categories in India, some perhaps organic, some perhaps inorganic. And we were really mulling over what are the categories that we should develop organically, what are the categories we should develop inorganically. Deodorants has always been a category that has been quite on top of my mind personally. I kind of have known it at a distance for many years. And it's one of those categories which is surprisingly attractive in many parts of the world, where deodorants becomes like an oral care category, where people don't leave home without deodorants, especially in Latin America and so on, where it's hot and where category development has been very good. It becomes a basic necessity category for those countries. And I kept wondering, just one sec, I'll tell you. I kept wondering why this category hasn't developed, but it was, kind of slightly recessive because many things to do. And also deodorants in India, I wasn't sure, is it too fragmented? Is the category really a high margin category in India? Has it gone down a path? And do we have other problems to fix when Really, we got this phone call, from the bankers for Raymond saying, "Hey, this asset's available." And when the call came, I said, "Yeah, I mean, good, but no, probably not for us, not at this time. Not sure about deodorants, not sure about sexual wellness." And I sort of parked the thought and didn't really take it forward for a few days when the call came. I also know this has been around for some time. So, I mean, a few days later, I was in Pune market when I just happened to be in one of these retail outlets and I saw this beer brand of Park Avenue, which I had seen in the past. I thought the packaging was quite interesting, never tried it. And I just picked this up and I said, because I had spoken about Park Avenue a few days ago, I said, let me just try this product. It's been in my mind. And I have a pretty, despite my income levels, I operate pretty close to the median of the consumer in terms of personal care. So this is roughly my personal care repertoire in my bathroom. There's a Cinthol soap, which I've been using for many years. Earlier on, it was in the closet, but right now I use it openly. And secondly, what has now replaced my shampoo has been this beer shampoo because I really like the product. And that got me curious about the company Park Avenue. And we did a few visits to go and visit retailers to check out their main line of business, which is deodorants. And one of the interesting things we found about deodorants when we went to the shop was that unlike many other brands of deodorants, this was centered around a few key SKUs. They had Park Avenue Good Morning, Park Avenue Voyage, and Kama Sutra Spark, which itself tells you that people are buying products and not brands. And then I visited a Good Morning consumer who really swore by it. He was using it every day, the way deodorants are used in many countries in the world, spraying it on the body and going to office every day, and said, I can't go to office without using Good Morning. So I think that really piqued our curiosity about the fact that perhaps this was a slightly different company in the deodorant space, because that really was our primary interest. And we said, okay, let's have a look a little bit more at this business, a little bit more closely at this business. And so what we found was a couple of things about the RCCL business. The first is that the brands were Park Avenue and Kama Sutra. In men's deodorants, it was number two in men's, and men's is about 75% of the deodorants market in India. And surprisingly, the market share had been rock steady for as long as we could find market share in the 18 to 19 range of shares. It was number three in commercial condoms, had lost a bit of share and then had stabilized. But deodorants was a rock steady market share. And we looked at its sales mix, it was 60% deodorants, 20% condoms, another 6-7% of soaps and shampoos each, and another 7-8% of other things. So a predominantly deodorants business. Deodorants, of course, is both Kama Sutra and Park Avenue. And condoms is only Kama Sutra, but majority of the deodorants, two-thirds of the deodorants, was Park Avenue. We then said, okay, look, this is looking interesting. It's the product seemed to be good, consumers seem to like it, stable share over long periods, and we know that this hasn't been a company that's invested too much in advertising. So we said, okay, let's look at these numbers a little bit more in detail. And we saw that the growth prior to COVID of this business was double digit, about 10% for many years actually. COVID, like many businesses, the business dipped. Post-COVID, it has come back to pre-COVID levels pretty rapidly. Kind of again indicating that Park Avenue in deodorants is a strong brand. All these sort of indicate that we're really talking about a strong brand. Incidentally, Park Avenue was launched in India in 1964, so it's been around for a long time in the fragrance space. When we then looked a little deeper at the financials, we went to the next step saying, hey, this is an exciting category. This does look like a strong brand or the makings of a strong brand, loyal product. A couple of things surprised us when we looked at the P&L. The first was that the gross margin was largely in line with the GCPL gross margin, and this was despite the fact that the MRP to NSV leakage was in the 50s. To give you a perspective, GCPL's MRP to NSV leakage is in the 30s. So there was about 2,000 bips more that was the gap between MRP and NSV. And part of this can be explained by category, but most of this gets explained by distribution and direct distribution and distribution discipline and efficiency. Companies that have better direct distribution tend to have a lower leakage from MRP to NSV. We also saw that the advertising and publicity was in the mid-single digits, which seemed a bit low. Even GCPL has advertising and publicity. India, I'm talking all India here, is 10%. And the other one, which was quite staggering, was that the employee and other expenses were in the late 30s. GCPL India's employee and other expenses are 18%. So what we saw was that there was clearly huge, and therefore the gross margin that was similar to GCPL was resulting in EBITDAs of high single digits, while GCPL runs mid-20s EBITDA. So what we were seeing is that a lot of loss from MRP to NSV, and then from NSV and GM down to EBITDA, a lot of loss that consumers don't really see. Consumers don't really see employees and other expenses. They only see gross margin and advertising publicity. So it did look to us that there seems to be a lot of scope in this P&L for value creation. And we said, okay, now let's study this business a little bit more carefully. So this was just the portfolio of their star SKUs that they have. Good Morning, Voyage, Spark, and Kama Sutra. I think there are three reasons why we bought the business. So once we sort of got the preliminary check on product strength starting, brand strength next, margin expansion possibilities. Let's go back. We said that there are three key reasons why this is an exciting business. Fundamentally, and in countries like India, one has to take a step back because in the HPC-PCC game, indeed in the FMCG-PCC game, we are very, very low down. And one has to take a long view on categories. And both deodorants and sexual wellness, we think, have long growth runways. It depends a lot on how, you know, leaders manage it, but fundamentally long runways. These are powerful and under-leveraged brands. And three is we saw significant cost synergies in the deal. Next chart. Let me first talk about categories having strong growth runways. So deodorants is a super exciting category across the world. You know, Nisa and I were just talking about it now and how many countries deodorants has been developed the way oral care has been developed. It's akin to oral care rather than akin to perfumes. And if you take India, for example, if per capita consumption is X, it's about 40 cents. Vietnam, which is 1.5 times the income of India, has 2.5 times the per capita consumption. Indonesia, with 3X, it's about a $4,000 economy, has 3X. Thailand is a $6,000 economy, so about 3.5 times India's per capita income, has 7X. And Mexico, which is about $9,000, so about 4.5 times, has 14X the per capita consumption of deodorants. If you see almost all countries that have a per capita GDP of greater than $10,000, deodorants and fragrances is the largest HPC categories, except the US, where it becomes the second or third. But almost all other countries, so unless you go to really high per capita income like Scandinavia, et cetera, then other one or two more HPC categories come. But anywhere between $10,000 and $35,000, deo plus fragrances is the largest HPC category. And both consumption and penetration, so as income goes up, consumption goes up, it becomes a regular use category. You know, I cannot go to office without deodorants. But in India, we not only have massive consumption gap, we also have massive penetration gap. And we reckon, you know, we can draw a curve of how per capita consumption of deodorants will go up with income. We reckon that this should be at a dollar, and this is all in dollars or in volumes, whichever way you look at it. A 13%-14% CAGR is what, logically speaking, this category should be. And a lot of it depends on what companies and marketeers do. And so if this is the dollar number, we're talking of a rupee number that's higher than this. So that's the real destiny of this category, the way we look at it. So firstly, this is one of those categories that will become huge in India, and you know, it's structurally a very attractive category. Yeah, we'll just go to the next chart first and then come back to this. Contrary to perception, and a lot of analysts have asked us the question on whether is this category, a lot of people I speak to, and even I myself, though I kind of know deodorants quite well, kind of say, oh, this is just not an exciting, there's too many players, margins, it's too fragmented. But actually, when you put pen to paper, right, because what appears in the market is a long tail, which typically happens when there's slight underinvestments in the category. But if you looked at the data, and we got Bain to do a piece of work for us, that the number of brands purchased per household per year in deodorants is less than soaps and a little bit more than shampoo and washing powder. So they're all in this kind of 3.5 to 5 range of number of brands used. And secondly, the number of brands that contribute to 2/3 of the category is not different in deodorants than it is for the other categories, or it's not materially different. So everybody seems to have, most of the big categories seem to have about 4 brands per using category, and about 5 to 6 brands account for 2/3 of the category. So this is not an outlier either in terms of loyalty or fragmentation. And we also saw that, if it was a super fragmented, disloyal category, it's hard to make high gross margins here. So the fact that it's making high gross margins, even at the size at which RCCL is, sort of lends credence to this. But this is kind of more rigorous work based on panel data and our consumer work that we did. Go back to the earlier one. I think there has been a question that a lot of you all have asked. One question is this really an exciting category? And I want to say that if you take a long view of this, and that's how we've got to really look at a market like India, it most certainly is. But even if one takes a short view of it, it appears more disloyal and fragmented than it really is. It really is a long tail. It really is a few brands occupying 60 share. There's been a question saying, you guys have Synthol. If you believe deodorants is such a big play, why not play Synthol? And I got a few questions last night. I read one or two analyst reports. So in my bookshelf, in my office, I have this book, which if you haven't read it, is one of those books that you must read as FMCG analyst's book called 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. And the very first law that Reese and Trout say is it's better to be first than it is to be better. The first mover advantage. And the reason is when you enter a category, you have a bit of mind space and it's very easy to take the mind space. And the second person takes a little bit of it, the third takes it. After that mind space gets occupied for the category. And the second law of the book, of the 22 laws, so it just tells you how important is it. But if you can't be first in a category, you set up a new category where you can be first in. So what Reese and Trout are saying, which is my experience, is if you're not among the first few entrants in the mind, you can only enter a category if you have a seriously disruptive product. So Synthol entering as another deodorant will be very hard when there are 5 or 6 brands that have already occupied the mind space of deodorants. And it's important to understand that mind space is a different concept to market space. And while the market is underdeveloped, the mind, when you say deodorants, has already got a few brands that consumers have taken ownership. And if we want to play deodorants, it is important that we first take one or two of these brands that have already taken that real estate in the mind. So that's probably why we may still have a view on Synthol. We've not thought about it, but it's important that if we want to enter deodorants, we enter with brands that are already established and develop the category. So that's really about deodorants, on why it's an exciting market, why the characteristics of the deodorant market in India, contrary to popular perception, are not different from other HPC, and why it's important for us to enter inorganically and hard for us to enter organically. I mean, condoms is the other category, which is, to be perfectly honest, not the first reason why we were looking at this acquisition. But as we started studying condoms, we felt that there's a big growth runway here as well. The global leader in condom firstly is an FMCG player, which is similar to us. The channels are quite similar. It is a heavily marketed and distributed category. What we also realized in India is that 2/3 of this market is non-commercial condoms in terms of volumes. So another 25% of it is mass commercial, but really a lot of the action is happening in premium commercial, which is ultra thin, long lasting, etc. And that market has been consistently growing for 5 years at 20%. Kama Sutra plays already in kind of the lower end of premium commercial and can certainly ride this trend. It has a strong equity. There seems to be one player playing premium commercial today, and certainly there seems to be scope for a second one with a very, very large upgradation or premiumization value driver. So you have one category, deodorants, which has a penetration and consumption value driver, and another category which has a very large premiumization value driver. So that's really why the categories were fundamentally attractive to us. And I guess the question is that the categories may be attractive, but what about the brands? And anecdotally, I told you, right, we got interested in this acquisition because we found a lot of people, not all that many people were using this, or it was not the most famous of brands, but those who were swearing by these products. So I think if you look at Park Avenue, the deodorant share of RCCL has been rock steady, despite pretty much not spending media in this category. So it's been a pretty absent in media. It has been under-distributed, even compared to the market leader. Leave alone the fact that, as I'll show you in the next chart, we actually think that the deodorants category itself can be better distributed. So it's a low media investment, average distribution. But when we did an NPS score, which is looked at users and net promoter scores of users, we actually found that Park Avenue was pretty much at the top of the category. So it was and again, so all this sort of makes sense, right? Strong brand, few variants, high margins, stable market share, because an existing base of loyal users who really like the product a lot. And apart from the under-leveraged equity of Park Avenue itself, we feel that the category itself, with a player like GCPL, who has, let's say, 4x the direct distribution reach of Park Avenue, we feel that we can go well beyond the category in terms of distribution. And at the same time, Kamasutra has an excellent chemist footprint, similar chemist footprint to us, though not all intersecting. So some unique outlets for Kamasutra, some unique outlets for us. But I think the interesting thing is condoms are a necessity for a chemist. Household insecticide and air fresheners are a nice optional. I mean, they'll keep it if you go to them, but they're not going to go and necessarily buy these categories. So if you have a necessary product for chemists, we will be able to probably improve the distribution of household insecticide and air care in chemists as well. So that was really the point on brand strengths and leverage. Finally, coming to this point on significant, which is probably, one is looking at the stars on what these categories can do, but one has to have one's feet firmly on the ground in terms of what we can deliver in the next 12 to 15 months, because otherwise, there's no point having these kind of acquisitions with all the bets in the future. And I think the cost synergies are something that we are 100%, or you can never say 100%, but very, very confident of. There's definitely a large scope to reduce MRP to NSV leakage. And there are very simple things. For example, the urban distributors in RCCL make 6.5% distributor margins. Ours are 5%. The rural channel there is a 10%, 11% distribution for the distributors. Leave the retailers aside. Ours is 7%. So there are just very low-hanging fruit. And then there are lots more that we can do. The second one is really on fixed overheads. As I told you, fixed overheads and other expenses are in the late 30s versus 18% for us. So you can just imagine what it is that we can get out of this. Then a bunch of smaller ones. One is soaps is a small business, but there's significant savings. Procurement, we are a large buyer of aerosols, both in household insecticide and in air fresheners. So, and palm oil derivatives as well. So aerosols in particular is a category that, we will now probably be the largest aerosol buyer in India. It'll give us significant scale. And we also intend to radically simplify our business. See, we radically simplified our Indian business. I think we kind of halved our SKUs over the last 1 year. And what we are going to do, or what we're going to do here, is to kind of rationalize the non-core. So whatever, we need to take in the first year, we will take whatever corrections, remove the low margin SKUs, bring the blockbusters into play here. And that also ultimately leads to significant cost synergies. A lot of overheads get spent on the long tail, and one doesn't really understand the cost. So once you cut off the long tail, you'll find a lot of cost savings coming, as we've seen in India. So cost synergies is something we are at the one end of the spectrum, we're very confident of the product and the brand, and at the other end of the spectrum, we're very confident of the cost that we can remove. So I think with that, I'll probably hand over to Sameer to just talk you through the business case and the valuation of this business.
Thanks, Sudhir, and good morning to all of you. So let me try to sort of cocktail in on what we heard earlier in terms of outlook and numbers. So to begin with, FY23, the revenue of the business is close to around 620 odd crores, and the margins are, you know, somewhere in range of mid to high single digits. To begin with, in FY24 on revenues front, we will drive simplification, we will see SKU rationalization and also focus on core. We will also see marketing investments to drive market development, which will lag in terms of investments to the growth, at least in very short term. And hence, we do expect, I mean, in FY24, the revenues to be more of the same in absolute terms as compared to FY23, and margins to be relatively better as compared to FY23, but not a whole lot. Obviously, I mean, simple math would suggest that in FY24, the acquisition is going to be EPS dilutive. But come FY25, we remain extremely confident of clocking low double digits to mid-teens growth in this portfolio, driven by cost synergies, scale, driven by revenue growth drivers. We do expect overall EBITDA margins to move up to mid-20s from FY25 onwards. And that's not just a year outlook, it's, I mean, onwards. And we expect, I mean, this trend to continue both in terms of growth and margins in the acquired business from FY25 onwards. EPS would be largely neutral, I mean, in FY25 is what we believe at this point in time. If we move to the next slide, which is on valuation and funding, so let's break this into two parts. Let's start with valuation. There have been a lot of questions in terms of what's the gross, what's the net valuation. I think a couple of clarifications over here. If you look at the gross valuation, it's 28-25 crores, which got released in the stat filing. But that includes 100 crores of cash in the balance sheet, which we will acquire. So the net valuation is around 27-25 crores. So that's point number one. The other thing to note over here is the way we have structured this transaction, which is a slump sale, as a result of which we will acquire brands. And these brands will get depreciated in tax books. In statutory books, these brands will have indefinite useful life, so there will be no depreciation, no P&L impact, and no EPS impact. But in tax books, the brands will get depreciated, as a result of which the tax profits will be lower. And very importantly, the cash tax outflow for a period of next 7 to 8 years will be significantly lower. This, from an NPV perspective, roughly aggregates to around 400 crores, and this was quite an important aspect in terms of the overall value which we paid for the business. Because the way we looked at this transaction net from a valuation perspective is not 27-25, but close to around 23-25 crores, adjusting the cash tax savings which we get from the way we have structured this transaction, and that implies close to around 3.7-3.8x of FY23 sale value. On funding front, couple of things. We are going to evaluate short-term financing to begin with. At this point in time, as we speak, say as of March end, we are net cash. We will be net debt for next 6 months, I think, ceteris paribus, and with the cash flow expected in FY24. Mid of FY24, again, we will be net cash. So that's the piece on funding, as well as how the net debt, net cash will evolve over the next 6 to 8 months. Thanks for your patient hearing. We can open the floor for the Q&A.
We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants connected on webcast, please click on the audio question button below the media player to ask a question. The operator will announce your name when it is your turn to ask. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Avi Mehta from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi,
Nitin,
Avi.
your line is unmuted.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, can you hear me, sir?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, okay. So, I just wanted to follow up. The market split based on income for DOs, is it similar to oral care with a large chunk at the basin? If you could kind of help understand that. And secondly, if you could also address, there is going to be the brand is going to be split between two parties in terms of FMCG being with you, especially about Park Avenue, and the garmenting business being with Raymond's. So how do you kind of address the possible differential in terms of brand positioning, which could pan out?
Yeah, no, I mean, the market, when I was comparing it with oral, I was comparing it in many other countries, not in India. The market in India for deodorants is very different from oral. Oral is universally penetrated in urban and rural and, consumed twice a day. Deodorants is only 20% penetrated in urban. Roughly, it's about 200 rupees a bottle for aerosols and even for the water-based sprays. And of course, now they have the smaller pack as well. So it's a very, very different dynamic from what oral is. I was only making the point of oral to see that what can the future be if we develop the category such that body odor becomes as important a driver for consumers as oral as breath. I think on the question on the brand, I'll just hand over to Nisa to answer it on.
Yeah, and just to add on that, I think deodorants has been, developed its fragrance and a want versus a basic need in other countries. So in a hot tropical country, we definitely see that as a huge advantage. I think on the question on the brand, being both in lifestyle and in consumer care, I think legally, obviously, we have complete rights for this. For all the consumer product categories with GCPL as we buy Park Avenue, you will appreciate that Godrej has a lot of experience of having a brand that grows across many categories. The companies, the operating companies sort of own the brand for their categories. And we see even in Godrej that there's been very little rub-off from one category to the other. So consumers really go into the category to buy that category. So I think Park Avenue is very standalone in the consumer's mind as a deodorant brand. I don't think they necessarily are buying it because of the clothes brand. And obviously, I think as we go down over the next few years, we'll have the opportunity to enhance the Park Avenue brand, perhaps bring Godrej into the branding. So those are all options that we will look at in the future. But we don't see this as a risk at all. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. Just a small bookkeeping. If you could give us a sense on the current market size for deos and condoms each.
So I think estimates vary, but roughly I think it's probably about 5,000 crores for deodorants and about 1,200 crores for commercial condoms. That is probably the size today. Deodorant is more accurate. Condoms is a little bit more difficult because there's a huge amount of non-commercial condoms, but that's the ballpark of the market size.
Perfect. Got it. Thanks for the point. Thank you very much.
Next question is from the line of Vivek from Jefferies. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, Vivek, you are.
Okay, great. A few questions. First is Sudhir, ever since you took over, the idea was to simplify, and there has been a simplification journey, and we have seen results partially. One impression that I have is that, in the context of where, let's say, Indian HI is, or for that matter, Indonesia, do you not think that, this acquisition is a bit ahead in time, given that you still have had job at hand in terms of turning around, particularly the HI business, which is one of the larger categories for you in India?
See, Vivek, one doesn't completely choose timings on things like this, but we felt confident when the opportunity came up that we were in the right direction in terms of market development of our core categories. We have simplified our SKU portfolio. And, you know, all this becomes a judgment call. One can wait for a perfect time and, you know, not have... So I would say as a combination of the where we are on the journey in 1.5 years, and I think we already sent out our early reads on last quarter, we feel quite confident that our capability of market development has gone up quite a distance. I won't say in all honesty that, you know, we have fully solved the problem in some of our categories, but we feel confident that we are on that path. And it was a logical next step for us to then ask the question that if we get better at something, then what is our next step? And the next step was clearly to move into focusing on India. See, again, you have to understand that we're focusing on HPC. We're focusing on India. We're focusing on underpenetrated categories. So we're not going out of focus. So we're building a DNA on market development in India, which is far and away the most attractive market we operate in. And we are kind of expanding. Timing, Vivek, one can't fully choose timing in these things, you know. So one just has to say one is either, you know, not ready, in which case one shouldn't do it. And one is reasonably confident and an opportunity comes up at the right price and the right value, which we think this one is, one's got to then, you know, move.
And I think our India business is a very strong business and has the complete capabilities of integrating this business quite easily. So I don't think from a timing perspective, I think this category itself is hugely interesting. Deodorants has a huge runway. And, you know, we have this inorganic opportunity, so I don't think we wanted to let it go. So, but from a management bandwidth perspective, I think given the strength of the India business, you know, we have enough leadership to do this integration successfully. I think it was a very good idea to do it now.
Got it. Thank you. Couple of follow-ups to that one. You know, Sudhir and Nisaba, deodorants over the last 20 years has always been very, very exciting category on paper. But if you look at, let's say, Darshan Bhai came back with Fog, you know, moved from 0 to 18% share, Unique lost a lot of share. Then ITC came from 0 to 5-6% with Pocket deodorant. Do you not think this, you know, while I you know, the slide was revealing, but nonetheless, you know, the brand loyalty still is low. And if somebody comes up with, you know, to your point, Sudhir, if any company or player comes up with something which is very differentiated, the loyalty still is way lower. Does that not worry you on this category? And I have one more question, you know, to your response. But first, you know, if you can answer this part.
No, Vivek, I mean, this was a question that we started off when we did our due diligence of this asset. But what are the facts we have on the table? And I don't want to get into the diagnosis. See, firstly, let's have a couple of facts on deodorants. Pre-COVID, for about 5 years pre-COVID, this category grew double digits. For the 10 and 15 years prior to that, this was a 20% growth category. So in all of this, this has been a category that has been fundamentally a high growth category. In this period of disruption in deodorants, the one company that has held market share despite not investing has been RCCL. Then when one looks at consumer level data, one doesn't see this as being either a particularly fragmented category. And those are facts, right? I presented those charts, which is that the top five brands account for 65% of share of this category. Nor is it a particularly disloyal category. Now, I don't want to fully share what is our diagnosis of the category, nor do I fully want to share at this stage, because I think that will be competitive and not fair to share. But if you take these three facts, that it's a fast growing category, RCCL has high gross margins, RCCL market shares have been stable, and you know, if you take these three facts together, and the fact that the category is neither disloyal nor over fragmented as it appears, and when you go to the shelf, it appears like that, but when you aggregate the data and look at it, because sometimes categories look a little different on shelf than what they are, and I've seen several categories like that. When you go to the shelf, it looks super fragmented, but actually when you look beyond that, you know, 2-3 brands account, you know, have a strong Pareto. So when you look at these four facts, I would say I'm having done the analysis, we're not worried, along with the massive upside, which is if somebody can get this category right and someone can convert deodorants into oral in terms of, you know, being a regular use hygiene product from being, as Nisa said, a wand, which you use when you go for a party. Like the consumer I met on Good Morning, who was using Good Morning every morning he was going to office. then you have a really large TAM to play in. So no, I think the downsides are very limited and the upsides are very high.
Got it. The other, you know, follow-up, Sudhir, was, you know, quite a few investors have asked this question. Does this acquisition also reflect in some ways your views on HI being a very tough category and difficult to see, you know, acceleration ahead, and that's why, you know, that's why the idea is to diversify into something which is, you know, more attractive? Can you clarify on that bit, on your position on existing portfolio now?
Not at all, Vivek. HI, especially premium HI, which is LV and aerosols, are also sub 20% penetration categories. Those are categories that require the exact same skills that deodorants requires, which is market development in India. And HI certainly has a long runway of growth. But, you know, as I showed in the chart there, we have a non-India portfolio. We have an India portfolio and an India under-penetrated portfolio. HI is very much part of that. So HI is very much part. But we also have soaps, and you know, we all know that soaps is a 99% penetrated category. So we would like to increase the weight of categories like HI, hair color, and air fresheners in India. That salience, and you know, this is only one step, and we'll take several steps. But our game plan is to increase the nature of those kind of categories in our overall category portfolio basket. Means, far and away, if you look at the next decade or two decades, the largest value creation opportunity for GCPL will continue to be HI in India. And I'll give you a perspective on HI. Huh? I mean, like, you know, since we're talking about HI, you know, per capita, and I keep looking at this per capita consumption, India is again at about half a dollar. HI category is slightly bigger than deodorants, but half a dollar. This can go to $2.5. I mean, HI doesn't have, you know, a 20-year plus runway the way deodorants has, because, but there's still a 5x potential of growth in HI, which is, you know, very good for the next 15, 20 years for us.
And I think deodorants is a, you know, being in FMCG, if you see it from an outside-in perspective, from outside of India, this is a huge category. And just the opportunity, you know, I went to boarding school when I was 16 in England and probably got influenced at around that time to use deodorant, antiperspirant. And it's, you know, it's like having a bath, it's like using soap every day. So I think for us, the category itself is, you know, really, really exciting in terms of what we can do with it, the long runway for growth. And then we were presented with this fantastic inorganic opportunity, very strong brands, underinvested, and, you know, the cost synergies also just make the, you know, what we paid for this business a real opportunity. And I think given how strong our India business is, the ambition is to be a much bigger, you know, GCPL in India. So, you know, a few more categories is a good strategy for us over the longer term.
Got it. I have a couple of more, if I may. One is, you know, Sudhir, why in media interaction you have mentioned, you know, a 10% growth for this business? You know, you'll be satisfied if it grows at 10%. Can you clarify, you know, on that comment as well?
No, I won't be satisfied if the business grows at 10%. But I think the business case will make sense even if it grows at 10%, simply because of the cost synergy. So what I think we got to separate the prudence of the business case and say, okay, historically this has been a 10%. There's no way this category is, or not moving, it's very unlikely this category is going to grow less than 10%. Even if it grows 10 and we have mid-20s EBITDA, which we feel quite confident of, this will be a really good business case. But really the right potential of this business is mid-teens. That's the right full potential. I mean, some of these things will take time. You know, the bottom line, in what I've seen in the past, is bottom line is more easy to predict. Top line takes time. Top line, you have to look at the long runway. You have to have a long game on top line, and then, you know, because top line is dependent both on category but also what companies do. So I would say we built the business case on 10, but our very much our ambition is mid-teens here.
Got it. And you're not buying manufacturing, you know, footprint along with in this transaction, right?
No. So it's an asset-light transaction. Yeah. RCCL buys deodorants third party, and you know, we have a big deodorant aerosol supply, and we have the condom manufacturing will remain with RCCL, who will supply to us as a contract manufacturer.
Got it. And this 400 crore, tax, what you're talking about, Sameer, are there any carry forward losses also, or this is just, the intangibles write-off that you're talking about?
This is the depreciation, Vivek, on intangibles, which is largely brand in the tax book. So this is completely on its own. It has absolutely no interlinkage to, existing, kind of cash tax or even book tax in a way.
Thank you. Vivek, may I request you to please join the queue for any follow-up? Also, before we take the next question, I'd like to remind the participant to please limit a question to two per participant. If time permits, you may join the queue for any follow-ups. The next question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Nuvama Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. A lot of questions have been asked on deodorant. So my first question will be on the men's wellness. Do you see GCPL continuing with this 4-5 years down the line? Why I'm asking this is, if one comment in your commentary was, this was not the first reason for buying this product portfolio. And second, if you see in terms of the size also as a percentage of the total business which you have bought, it's a small size. And third is, GCPL currently has no presence there. And you also mentioned that there are non-commercial products by other companies also, and maybe even the NGOs, etc. So do you see that you will continue to exist, say, 4-5 years down the line, or you would focus only on the DO essentially in the medium term?
I think the DO category was definitely something that we had outlined as a very interesting play for GCPL for the future. But I think when we looked at the sort of sexual wellness business, I think we find that category very interesting also. But I think the main theory was on deodorants. We can't comment in terms of 4-5 years later what we would do. But I think for now, we're committed to play in both categories.
Sure. My second question is on the overall leakage, etc., which you explained in terms of the MRP to NSV. So now when I see your guidance for FY24 in terms of flattish sales, flattish EBITDA, wanted to understand that because clearly in some of the acquisitions by other companies, we have seen that the first year in terms of sales is a bit tough because there's normally EV to sales kind of methodology being used in terms of acquisition. So there is a push model by the earlier company which is used. So is that the one reason, big reason why you expect sales to be flattish? You did mention that you will rationalize the non-core and the tail. So why would you want to start with non-core and tail rationalization in the first year? Why don't you do it later? Because ultimately when you're starting, it's better to start with a bigger revenue and then also do the higher advertising spend. So could you explain that bit?
I think, Avnish, there are several reasons why. I don't exactly know. We've done this deal quite soon. I don't exactly know how we will do this, but I'll roughly tell you what we will probably do in year one. It's important to rationalize the non-core SKUs for a variety of reasons. One is the non-core SKUs tend to be lower gross margin. They tend to occupy a lot of, overheads. For instance, we can easily slap, just for instance, and it's not that we've decided, we can easily slap on the top 50, 60 SKUs onto our existing salesman who goes to a shop with no added cost. So it's important for us to right structure this and to be strategic right from the beginning. So that's why it's important for us to remove non-core SKUs in the beginning itself. There's also inventory. The business runs much higher inventory than GCPL runs. We run 10 days of inventory at our distributors. They run 30 days of inventory at their distributors. So all this costs MRP to NSV, right? All these are not things that, we will have to bring to our own level. The distribution gains that we see will not come in the first few months. We'll have to we'll have to figure out how we, what parts do we retain, what parts do we merge. All this won't happen immediately. So I think for a combination of the fact that the benefits won't come immediately, we need a little bit of time to plan. We have to reduce the inventory, and complexity has to be reduced if we have to really focus on deodorants and sexual wellness, these two categories, and really propel them. These are the likely reasons that revenue will be flattish. There will be some natural growth as well because this category will grow. I think it has grown in the last 2 years post-COVID. Those will get counteracted by some of these. But I mean, Abneesh, it's hard for us to give an exact number. I think what we're saying is give us 9-10 months to figure this out. But by the time this year ends and we start the new year, we will then really kickstart with a lot of momentum.
Sure. One clarification on the flat margin. Flat margins which you mentioned. So when I see your commentary, you have said the distributor margins will easily save 150 to 200 bps because of your distribution system. And second, you also mentioned you will save 12% employee cost, 30% versus 18%. So will it be fair to say that ad spend will commensurate increase because you are guiding towards flattish EBITDA margin? And second is when you mentioned the leakage in terms of MRP to NSV, I think you are comparing your whole company to this small company. My question is, on the overall DO category, won't the leakage be very similar? Will it be unfair to compare Digital, which is a much larger company, soaps and HI and hair color? You have a very strong market share. While DO is a very different consumer behavior, very different buying behavior also. So can you comment on what's the leakage between MRP and MSP in the DO category?
Yeah, let me answer question two first. See, firstly, that the MRP to NSV, even within deodorants, RCCL has higher leakage than the benchmark. Why does MRP to NSV leakage happen? You know, why are some categories? See, deodorants is an aerosol category, so is household insecticide. Why do they have different MRP to NSV leakages? It has a lot to do with the direct distribution and the command of channel that the market leader has. So yes, some of it has to do with the nature of the category. Within the category itself, this one has got excess MRP to NSV leakage. Two is leadership of the category. You know, if you know someone like us with a lot of direct distribution and a large player comes in, we will see further synergies in MRP to NSV. It may or may not match. So I don't think, Abneesh, the right thing to say is that these guys have mid-50s or 50s leakage. We have 30s leakage, so we will bring this to 30s leakage. It's just to show that there's a very large gap. Some of it we will bridge. Similarly, on the employee plus other expenses, which is what we call overhead, this is in the late 30s. It's not 30 to 18. It's in the late 30s and we are 18. So there's a very large gap there. Those are, you know, completely internal. That is what a scale, a large company gets versus a small company. So I think that we're more confident of. What was your first question, Abneesh? This was your second question. Ad spends, I mean, look, you saw the chart on, you've seen what, you know, our own belief in GCP and advertising you've seen over the last year, Abneesh. You've seen the amount that this brand spends on advertising when compared to its peers. It is a mid-single digit A&P advertising company. GCPL itself, with our kind of portfolio, with large amount of soap and all, is a double digit A&P. So, you know, we will certainly, that will be certainly an area that we will look at.
Thank you. Abneesh, request you to please join the queue for any follow-up. The next question is from the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec.
Yeah, hi, good morning. This had two quick questions. One is, you know, is there, if you look at gross margin tier for the three segments, which is 60% of the business in DOs, 20% is sexual wellness and 20% is others, what would be the gross margin tiering from this 50% gross margin that you have? So my assumption is that sexual wellness would be highest, followed by DOs, and followed by the others. Would that be the fair way to look at it?
I don't think we'd want to share the exact numbers, but actually it's the other way around. Deodorants is the highest, followed by sexual wellness. Deodorants is a high gross margin category. So I'm saying, in perception, this is a high margin category.
Got it. And the second thing is, you know, is there any kind of brand royalty arrangement, etc., between Raymond and GCPL, or is it the same category?
Sorry, I couldn't hear that question.
I'm not very clear on his
question.
I could not hear it actually.
Yeah,
Harit,
can you hear
that?
Yeah, it's better.
Yeah, is there any kind of brand royalty arrangement between Raymond and GCPL for the Park Avenue brand, or is this a clean cut? Apparel is Raymond and FMCG guys.
There is no royalty arrangement, Harit. As Nisa mentioned earlier, we have the Park Avenue brand rights to pour into any FMCG category, and the apparels space or the lifestyle space continues to be with Raymond's under Park Avenue brand.
Got it. And the last quick one was, you know, is it a fair assumption to make that the bulk of this business is urban? So you guys are 70-30 in terms of urban rural split at GCP and India standalone. Would this be much higher in terms of urban, maybe 80-90%?
Yeah, I think the business would have a relatively higher urban skew, both, I mean, between DOs as well as sexual wellness products.
So significantly more than the India GCPR business.
Yeah, at this point in time, yes, sir.
Got it. Those are my three questions. Thanks.
Thanks.
The next question is from the line of Sheila Rathi from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. So my first question was, you know, at the time when we were evaluating this transaction, was there any mindset that, you know, instead of going and acquiring, why don't we go ahead and build such a business? Because yes, the next extension for you would be getting deeper in the personal care space, but why not choose the other route of, you know, building it on our own? What is it that, you know, this is very different versus the past acquisitions we have done?
No, I think, Sheila, they're difficult to, so as I told you, see, it is not easy to build new brands in categories which are established in the mind for a long period of time. They're not very, you can build new brands in new categories or new brands in existing categories when you have a disruptive product. For example, we have built Magic in hand wash. It was a disruptive product. When we came, you can't just come with another hand wash product and expect to succeed in hand wash. So these are the two criteria in which you can build new products, new brands within categories. And deodorants was not a category that it is obvious to us that, you know, maybe we can disrupt it, but it's not the obvious thing right now for us to enter with another deodorant and succeed in it. There might be personal, so when we look at the personal care category, there may be categories which we feel are undercooked, and they might be appropriate for us to enter organically, or we may find a disruption like we did in Magic Hand Wash and may enter organically, or we may find that there are large number of brands, but the category is undercooked and has a long runway. So the brands are cooked, but the category is undercooked, in which case we should buy the brands and then, you know, develop the category.
Yeah, and I think, Sudhir, your thinking also, which you shared when you came, is that if it's like a 0 to 5% penetration, like we did with air, there's nothing actually to buy, so you have to build. But when you're in a slightly higher penetration than that, when you do the math also, you know, this is quite a sweet spot in terms of how it will financially work out in terms of building a brand, especially if you can get a strong brand.
Understood. And would we really have plans of rebranding these products going ahead? I think this question was asked earlier also, but I just want to be very clear on that bit.
No, I mean, as I said, we bought these brands because the brands are strong. So, where's the question of rebranding? We've done the acquisition of brands.
Might strengthen the brand.
Yeah.
And my final question is, what is the salience of online penetration for this category?
I don't want to get quoted with the wrong number, but I think it's about 10%.
Okay.
So it's about 2x of FMCG.
That is also something which we will... Yeah. So
yeah.
Probably the distribution strategy will be very different from our usual product offerings.
I mean, look, sexual wellness will certainly be different because most of sexual wellness comes through chemists. And yeah, 10 is higher than 5, but it's still the 90 which goes through for deodorants, regular channels.
Understood. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arnab Mitra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My first question was again on the competitive landscape, though you have, I think, touched upon a lot of aspects there. But the consolidation of the top five brands that you mentioned, has that consolidation increased over the last 5-6 years? Because we do remember a very high clutter in the category 7-8 years back. So I just wanted to know, as a trend line, is that changed towards more consolidation? And added question to that would be, you know, when Fog came with the no aerosol kind of spray, there was a big move in the market towards that. Has that trend reversed or at least stabilized, or is the market still moving towards that form of deodorant?
I can answer the second question more easily, Arna, which is it has stabilized. The first question I can answer impressionistically, which was this was a very consolidated category when I remember it in the 2000s. Impressionistically, but I don't know numerically, it may have got fragmented, but it certainly is consolidated. It's not super consolidated today, but it is pretty consolidated today. So it's possible what you said, but I probably need to look at the numbers around 2010 to 15 more carefully. Whether, you know, a good way of looking at it is how many brands constitute the top 2/3 of the category. It may be what you said, but I'm not sure about it. But it certainly, if there has been fragmentation which has been excessive in the category, it has been a short-lived thing. It is neither fragmented today, nor is it fragmented when I remember it, Arnab, in the 2000s.
And I think the Fog phenomena has happened many times in many different categories, right? When you disrupt, you give the consumer better value, whether it's in, you know, it's happened in detergents, we've seen it happen in across many categories. So I think Fog was such a success that, you know, it's top of mind, but this does happen in across categories.
Got it. And my second question was on the distribution. So if you could help us with what is the current distribution of the Raymond's FMCG business, and how is the distribution of Park Avenue different from, let's say, the market leader in terms of direct plus indirect, just to understand how much of, you know, benefit can happen when the distribution expansion plays out.
Yeah, I put that up, Arnab, which is the market leader is about 2x in terms of direct plus indirect of Park Avenue. And our direct distribution is 4x of what Park Avenue is. And I think that's at the very least. So, okay, you know, we will have distribution in GT.
Understood. And if I could just ask on seasonality, any sense if you could help us with how the category seasonality is between the four quarters? Is it very seasonal towards summers? And therefore, is that going to be a bit of a challenge as you transition this year in the middle of the season?
I know it is seasonal, Arnab. I will get back to you on how seasonal exactly it is. I don't think it's as seasonal as household insecticide. But there is certainly a summer seasonality. But I'll get back to you on the exact numbers. I don't think it's certainly globally, it is not hugely, hugely seasonal, because as Nisa said, it becomes a habit. And as it becomes a habit, it de-seasonalizes. In India, I'll get back to you with the data.
Okay, thanks. That's it for my side.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your question to 2 per participant. If time permits, you may join the queue for any follow-ups. The next question is from the line of Latika Chopra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question was, you know, if you benchmark, you know, the product portfolio on average net realizations to the company, it could get influenced from the channel mix that you have versus the top three brands in the US. Where does the Park Avenue brand stand? And partly I'm asking this question also is that if you're going to reduce the gross price to MRP to net price differential down from 50%, don't you think it poses a risk to market share, which Park Avenue enjoys today? Any thoughts?
See, there are two, three things here, right? One is a short, some of this is relatively low risk. Some of it is will have to happen in consonance with brand strength. What is relatively low risk is distributor margins. Our primary distributor margins are relatively low risk. That just has to do with scale. what is relatively low risk is the gap of gross to net between Park Avenue and other players in the market, which will get through direct distribution. What is relatively higher risk, which will happen over a period of time as brand strengthens and velocity goes up, because ultimately retailers look not at margins but at return on investment. So you have to have a few SKUs that have very high velocity. That will come a little later. So I would say this gross to net, I mean, and you know, we're not going to go overnight from the 50s to where GCPL is today. There is some part of it that is very low risk, which we can do immediately, which we get as a consequence of scale. And some part of it we'll get, I hope, over the next 3-4 years as a consequence of strategy.
So, I was asking more from the net end consumer price. You know, is it very different from the top 3-4 players in the category? Is it like the, you know, why people buy Park Avenue? You know, is it like if you increase the final net price to the end consumer, does that affect the, you know, growth trajectory for the brand? Any sense, if you've looked at, you know, the numbers for the last couple of years?
Most deodorants sell at about 200. The MRP is about 220 rupees, give or take, for most brands. The price at which retailers buy it is anywhere between 120 and 140. Now, there is this gap between 120 and 140 between various companies, which is a relatively easy bridge. Between the 220 and 140, which is significantly higher than other categories in FMCG, that's a longer game. So, as I told you, there's a short-term benefit, which is low risk, and a long-term thing, which we won't do immediately. We will only be able to bridge the gap between, let's say, 140 and 220, which is the MRP is 220, the net selling price is 140, give or take. That gap we can only bridge when the equity becomes stronger of the general category in rotation. Okay. But certainly, between 110 or 120 and 140, that gap can be bridged.
Okay, and then the second part was, you know, the M&A strategy of the company. We have seen this transaction. Should we expect that, you will be more aggressive to look out for more M&A opportunities in the HPC space? And if you could also elaborate the process that the company follows, you know, is there an M&A committee and, you know, who the members are, you know, when such, opportunities are presented to the board? Thank you.
One of the things is GCPL, you know, is a company that is quite blessed to have a very good position in India and very strong capability in India. And certainly, we would like to increase our TAM. And we'd like to increase our TAM not because we're unhappy with the categories that we are present in. We're very happy with those categories. But because we feel that we have the capability of addressing a larger TAM quite well in India. Now, that TAM will come periodically from organic. You know, we'll have to, first and foremost, the priority is to get our existing businesses growing. So I don't want to move focus away. That is the biggest job. But we will keep evaluating new categories in terms of whether we can do an organic entry. If it's an underdeveloped category or we have a disruptive innovation, we will do it organically. And if a category meets certain set of criteria, you know, broadly speaking, still we are in the HPC space. We would like to be in relatively high margin businesses, relatively underpenetrated categories, but not so underpenetrated which is less than 5. We may go in for, and if the opportunity presents itself at the right price and right valuation, we may go into inorganic. But I think the main point is that as we strengthen our existing categories and as we get more and more confident of our existing categories, we will certainly look towards expanding the TAM of GCPL. I mean, if you look at, you know, the most valuable companies, they operated very well, both in FMCG and outside FMCG. They operate in very, very large, addressable markets. And that is certainly, you know, going to be on our mind as we go forward, which is a TAM expansion.
But TAM expansion also happens organically,
yeah,
like we did in air care. So I don't think, we do want to see the India business grow very strongly, but organic is always our number one priority. But, you know, as very interesting opportunities come, we look at them, and we have been looking at them over the last few years. Also, some we've, you know, sometimes you can't make the deal happen. So we feel very lucky that, you know, we've made this happen.
Thank you.
Last question on the process on M&A. I think we have an M&A head who is dedicated to M&A, and you know, like all companies, we have a process where the M&A head scouts and identifies opportunities. There is, you know, few of us in the management committee, Nisa is the chairperson, and then of course the board. Ultimately, all these acquisitions are approved by the board.
Sure. There's only one feedback, you know, because we have been hearing from investors, obviously, is that, you know, on the valuation bit, and I know, you know, there were nuances to it, but was it a very tightly fought asset for, or anything that you can share? Or
I don't think that's something we can really comment on, but, you know, we have a very strong financial process, both strategic, it has to make strategic sense, and financial sense to us. So we follow our process. We can't really comment on, you know, what exactly that process or who else was in the process.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Hello.
Hi, Percy.
Hi. My first question is on the sexual wellness category. While you mentioned that's not the first category which drew you into this acquisition, but just wanted to know your thoughts on this. I mean, right now the category is synonymous with condoms as far as this business is concerned. Would you like to expand and go into subcategories of sexual wellness at some point of time, or that's not something that you've thought about at all?
No, even if you know, I tell you the thing about sexual wellness, you're right, currently it's synonymous with condoms, and I don't know what our future plans are, and probably not appropriate to share it either. But I think the important thing is, you know, 3.2 billion condoms sell in India. 2 billion of them are non-commercial, another billion are mass, 200 million odd sell at the premium end. So there is a huge runway for, and that premiumization journey has begun. It's not like it's not begun in India. You know, that segment is growing at 20%. So there's a pretty huge and exciting premiumization journey within condoms to first crack for us, I suppose, before within sexual wellness, thinking about other categories and so on. There are, of course, legal limitations, etc. But I would still say that our probable focus in the next few years will be upgradation within condoms.
Okay, got it. Secondly, just wanted to know the funding of this acquisition. If you can give some more clarity on exactly how much do you plan to use from the existing cash balance, and how much of debt do you plan to take?
So, Percy, I think to begin with, we are looking at short-term funding. It largely will be, you know, kind of borrowers because our existing cash is also, I mean, in, you know, medium to long-term investments. I think in terms of arbitrage between borrowing cost and existing yields which we are getting on our investments, honestly, there is nothing much to choose, maybe 15-20 bps in, you know, kind of either direction. As I was calling out earlier, my sense is, you know, we are net cash any which ways as of March, and for next 6 months, we will be net debt. And ceteris paribus, mid-FY24, again, we will be net cash.
Right. And last question is on the cost synergies. As you mentioned, their costs are in the late 30s. We are at 18%. I think that gap should be bridged pretty quickly. I mean, as soon as you take over, why is the margin expansion happening only in FY25 as per your estimates?
Firstly, you know, this has been a pretty quick transaction. So we'll have to figure out where we can physically save. So these things physically take some amount of time to plan and execute. There are also one-time costs that hit in the first year of the acquisition, whatever you decide to do. So my general experience on these matters has been that the first year is unpredictable and fluid, and often not easy to really exactly pinpoint. It's just much easier to give yourself a little bit more time on these, because you can't overnight knock off some of these costs. You know, it does take a little bit of time for us to get going on this. I don't think 9-10 months is a particularly long time, Percy, in the scheme of things. By the time it's because
okay,
there's
from me.
Sorry, go on. Right,
that's all from me. I have a couple of hygiene questions which I'll connect with separately with Tapan. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shirish Pardeshi from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Samir and Sudhir. Thanks for the opportunity and good morning. Just one curious question. In terms of channel saliency, if you have any data you can share at this time. The reason why I'm asking because whenever you get into Raymond store, they try and push the accessory, and I would be given understand that Park Avenue deodorant sales is also higher. So I was more keen on understanding how the channel saliency and what is the Raymond store contribution in the entire sales.
Yeah, so Suresh, at this point in time, as I mean, we called out the basket of alternate channels would be anywhere between, you know, 25 to 30 odd percentage for the portfolio, and the rest would be, you know, general trade, including the chemist, you know, channel. And that's where, I mean, we called out that we have significant synergies in terms of leveraging GCPL's distribution network for Park Avenue and Kama Sutra brands, and vice versa, leveraging Kama Sutra's, you know, chemist network for leveraging GCPL's brands. So that's a distribution synergy plans which we have, which will kickstart as we, you know, kind of speak.
Okay. And in the last question on the consolidation. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please. Yes.
Yeah. So, second and last question on by when you think the consolidation will start and we will try and report the numbers? Is it from this quarter onwards or after a quarter we will do consolidation and start reporting the numbers?
From this quarter onwards itself, I think the date of completion of transaction roughly would be around, you know, mid-May. So, the consolidation kickstarts from this quarter onwards.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Samir. All the best to you and the team.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranav from Rare. Please go ahead. Pranav, your line is unmuted. You may please unmute your line and proceed with the question. Seems there's no response from the line of Pranav. We will move to the next question. That is from the line of Kunal Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. My question is on the historical revenue growth. While the two-year number looks good, if you look at three-year CAGR, it's only about 2%. With flat sales in FY24, even four-year CAGR will be 1-2%. Just wanted to understand if FY20 is the right number to look at, or how do we look at the historical growth rate of this business?
Yeah, Kunal, I think, see, what we have to look at is many categories that got affected during COVID have recovered at different rates, largely depending on what companies have invested in the recovery. So one has to look at the trajectory of whether it is recovering, which the answer is yes. And two is to really look at the secular growth of this category. One has to look at a five-year period pre-COVID where this company grew at 10% and so did the category. And the 10 years before that where the category grew at 20. Therefore, it gives me, having seen a lot of COVID categories within GCPL and outside, I know that categories will recover. And this, one of the things we ask the question is post-COVID, is the category recovering? And the answer is it has recovered to pre-COVID levels. I would be very surprised if even other things being equal, this didn't go back to pre-COVID levels of growth from here on.
Understood. Second and last question, on the margin improvement from high single digit to mid-20s with potential increase in advertisement spend, what are the risks and what are the key assumptions which you are building in? And what are the low-hanging fruits in terms of margin uplift?
No, I mean, look, I already showed you, right? The two biggest, there are several cost levers. The two biggest of them are gross to net. Some of those gross to net are pretty easy for us to do. So I won't say they're high risk. And the overhead expenses, which is all expenses outside of margins and outside of COGS and advertising, there seems to be almost a 2000 bip difference between us and RCCL. So some of it, of course, may be in the nature of the category and this and that. But between these two, there seems to be a lot more than, from high single digit to mid double digits. and leaving aside quite a lot even for increase in advertising.
Understood. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
One is on, in terms of organization structure, so would you be also, you know, having employees coming in from Raymond, or this will be managed by, you know, GCPL team?
No, we will certainly have employees coming in from Raymond. We're merging it, and there's a lot of category knowledge that will reside within Raymond Zurich. What will the final org structure be of this unit? How much of them will absorb in other parts of GCPL? All that is to be. But all companies certainly have a large number of people who have a lot of expertise in the category, and that is not something we would like to lose.
Okay, got it. And the other thing, you know, Sudhir, you started with the story, you know, on the shampoo bit. So here the focus is primarily going to be, you know, deos and condoms, or you are thinking already about, you know, Park Avenue as a mother brand and doing a few more things beyond?
No, I think shampoo was just an anecdote on what got me interested. But I think our strategic focus will be on deodorants and sexual wellness. I mean, you know, shampoos and soaps are categories we know well. They're 50 crores and we'll get some cost synergies, etc. But and we've not thought very deeply about it also. That's not been the basis for the thesis development here. Maybe with time we'll think about Park.
I think one thing we've all been, you know, pleasantly surprised with is the quality of the Park Avenue products, right? And Kama Sutra, which probably explains the market, this steady market share over these many years, even though it's the most underinvested brand in the category. So, and I think, you know, sometimes we're sharing these anecdotes. I was just telling Sudhir today morning, my gym instructor congratulated me and said that she finds it a fantastic brand and that she keeps it in all her gyms for all her trainers and customers to use. So I think the products in themselves and the brands are both very, very strong. And we've seen in other categories also that, you know, we've seen in Synthol, in Tamil Nadu and stuff, when you get that perfume right, it becomes quite a big loyalty hook for the consumer.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Sachdeva from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question. So my question is that deo category seems like very attractive when you look at the past historical growth rate. And it seems like it's a D category to be in. But theoretically, a few have succeeded. Even many leaders have failed to sort of monetize that, you know, category growth. And in part, it's very mass market, very A&P hungry, and maybe one or two leaders take all and others remain fragmented. But if I interestingly compare China market with India market, now China market, deodorant is a very small category. And China is about 15 years ahead of the consumption journey, or at least the BPC evolution of China is way ahead. And now China, basically deo is very small. In fact, India is four times the deo market of China. And if I look at the fragrance market of China, is way larger than the deo market. And if I look at next, say, 20 years, when India's economic incomes will be rising, consumer preferences will be shifting from mass market to maybe more evolved categories such as fragrances. Do you see a risk that category faces some amount of transient headwind rather than a tailwind when consumer premiumizes, and people who do mass market deodorant may not have a right to win in, say, for example, the premium side, which is fragrances, and more evolved consumer as it becomes. So do you see that category, while offers some tailwinds in the past and with some challenges of mass market being mass market oriented, but looking to the future, it might be actually a bit of a theoretically challenged category where it would be transitioning to something else?
See, the thing about deodorants depends a lot on how marketeers make it from a want to a need. China is an outlier. If you look at Brazil, for example, at the same income level as China, it has $10 per capita consumption of deodorants. and that has been because of some fantastic category development work done in Latin America. So I would say that China is the outlier. India is below the curve, but on, you know, still not very far away from the curve. Indonesia, Thailand, etc. are all on the curve. Latin America goes above the curve. So what differentiates, if you draw a curve of deodorant consumption and per capita income, it's a line that rises exponentially till actually $20,000 and then gradually flattens out. That's how deodorants works. The countries that are above the curve, which is Latin America, etc., have done excellent work in making deodorants into oral that you needed to leave the house. The outlier below the line is China, where, you know, no work has been done in that area at all. India is slightly below the curve, and most of Southeast Asia is on the curve. So I would rather look at countries on the curve like Indonesia, which we know quite well, Vietnam, Thailand, etc., and predict it, and not China. You're right about one thing, which is that as countries develop, perfumes also do become larger. Perfumes tends to be a fragmented market, is also correct. Deodorants doesn't tend to be a fragmented market. I mean, the definition of deodorants is that which deodorizes you. A perfume is that which makes you smell good and a fragrance. So, but there is room for growth for both. Deodorants and perfumes will both grow quite exponentially as countries develop. And it's one of those categories, by the way, where, you know, per capita consumption can go as high, deodorants plus fragrance can go as high as $50, which is what the US, for example, is today. So there's no end to deodorants becomes a smaller and smaller salience as countries become richer, is also true. But that's a more attractive market. It's a more consolidated, more loyal market, deodorants.
Sure. Sure. That's very useful perspective, Sudhir. Thank you. And if I may stretch a little bit on one more thing, that the kind of comment you made that despite very low A&P spend, the Park Avenue has been still retaining its market share quite well. And that bit intrigues me because, what is that value proposition in such a market where even Unilever has struggled with all the might of distribution and branding and capabilities of market development? While Park Avenue silently could manage it without spending much, what is that value proposition that you discover that the brand has been able to put together that others couldn't? And, so I'm sort of interested in when you increase the A&P spends and how do you monetize that capability even further? I mean, just want to understand from your perspective that why this has happened, that despite being low spenders, they are able to maintain their spends, market shares.
At the end of the day, it's speculative, but see, I reckon that the product has high loyalty and brands that focus on one or two SKUs. So I told you, like Park Avenue Good Morning and Voyage is 70-75% of Park Avenue. So two SKUs, two fragrances. It's not, you know, they've gone down the path of building a habit with two, because there are two ways in which you can run fragrances. You can have a flirtatious model saying, hey, you go to different parties, smell different. And that's one way of building the category. The way Park Avenue has willingly chosen, it's not done it through advertising, but willingly to its pro, has got two excellent fragrances, Good Morning and Voyage, which it has built as a male habit in the morning to spray on your body and go to work. And you want to smell like that. Like, you know, the soaps that we use become part of our identity. You know, the toothpaste we use, we smell that way. So that willy-nilly is what has happened to Park Avenue, and I think that is why Park Avenue has managed to be pretty resilient in the face of a lot of ups and downs in this category. And I think that's why I think it's a hidden jewel. I think we may have discovered in this category a brand that has got the makings of what can be a really cornerstone brand in this category.
Sure. Thank you so much, Sudhir, for your perspective. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. That's all for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is paucity of time. We'll be taking our last question for today. That is from the line of Chanchal from Birla. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my questions. Some of my questions have been answered. But Sudhir, just to understand the brand structure, now Park Avenue as a brand will be managed by two entities. Godrej as a brand, as Nisaba highlighted, within Godrej fraternity, Godrej Consumer, Godrej Properties, Godrej Lock is a brand which is within the Godrej fraternity, but I mean, can you give examples of where the brands are handled by two different entities and brand structure doesn't get differentiated?
But Lux soaps and Lux underwear, so maybe we're a bit luckier that this is not an underwear brand but a lifestyle brand. But really, you know, even in the Godrej brand, and we've done a lot of studies on, you know, how does, you know, when you advertise one category, how does it sort of affect the other category, or a crisis in one category, how does it? And we see it, we see that they're quite separated. So, and I think in India's history, you look at all these big conglomerates, the Bajaj Group. They have a Bajaj Consumer Care, Bajaj Finance, Bajaj Auto. And I don't think there's much. So I could actually, you know, we could have a full conversation on this separately, but I don't want it to take too much of everyone's time. But, you know, legally we're very covered. And I think from the consumer's mind, the name might be, you know, the same. But, and initially you might have taken the values. You know, we know that Godrej gives us a foot in the door into any category we go. But then consumers really buy because of the relevance, the convincing of that advertising and the quality of the products in that category.
So thanks. That answers the question. But still, I mean, on a positive side, yeah, the brand has a positive rubber effect. The problem is in the negative side also, if the brand does something wrong, then we may have a negative rubber effect. That's the only worry. Otherwise, I think the structure, if you have a right, it can play out.
Yeah, no, as part of the contract, I think we have some guidelines. For example, we have agreed categories that neither of us will enter, for instance, you know, tobacco or cigarettes and so on and so forth. So we have some kind of guardrails. We're starting off from a position where the brands are both kind of for the aspiring man. But as Nisa said, you know, there are plenty of brands that have started off from a common position. They have some things that mean the same. So Park Avenue does is a masculine brand in both sides, but then they go their different journeys and then they have to stand on their own feet to those two journeys.
Yeah, but I'm saying you have Bajaj Motorbike, yeah. You have Bajaj Hair Oil. So I'm not even giving our examples, which are varied. So, you know, I think in everything there's probably some amount of risk, but I don't think we see anything material here, and we will develop Park Avenue going forward. You know, we have the opportunity also, how do we use the Godrej brand on the pack and that association also, which is available to us if we so choose to differentiate it more.
So thanks. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that would be our last question for today. On behalf of Godrej Consumer Products Limited, that concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.